Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, our first meeting of the 2018 legislative session. I want to welcome everybody. Please note for the record, Senator Gelser is excused. She's at a different committee. And Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, we have four items today. I'm not really going to do an orientation. I think you're all pros.
Senator DeBoer is new to us. We welcome him, but he has been on Ways and Means Subs before, so we value that experience.
So I'm going to just go ahead and start in with the first item, which is a request to have a fee ratified for the medical marijuana program. Just a reminder about the fee ratification process. Typically, a fee increase or a new fee is requested during the interim by an agency. That fee is approved administratively by Department of Administrative Services. And then in the next session, the agency comes back to the legislature and has a bill to have that fee ratified. Oftentimes, the situation, which is the case in this fee, is that legislation was passed in the last session telling the agency to establish a fee for something. They do that in the interim, and then they come back to have it ratified. There will be one fee ratification bill that will be introduced that will have all the fees for the various state agencies that need a ratification. And I think that's it. The agency's here to give you a real brief summary of the fee itself.
Great. So I'm going to open work sessions on all four items simultaneously, if that's copacetic with you, Ms. Ames. Good. And we'll get started with the fee ratification for the medical marijuana program.
Morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, director of the Oregon Health Authority. I'm going to sort of be ringmaster today as we cycle through the various bills that you have, and Ms. Ames introduced this bill more than adequately, and so I don't have anything to add. I'll turn it over to Carol Ann, who runs the medical marijuana program, to very briefly talk about how we got to the fee we got to.
Okay. Good morning, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward and Ray Field, and members of the committee. I am Carol Young, the section manager for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. The $480 annual fee is for our medical growers, processors, and dispensaries to begin using the Oregon Liquor Control Commission's cannabis tracking system. This fee was directed in law, and the law stated that the authority was to collect this $480 fee and transfer the money to the Marijuana Control and Regulation Fund. All of our medical dispensaries and processors and growers that are at a location of 13 plants or more must start using this fee effective, or the system effective July 1. Allowing the fee at this time allows us to get them into the system and ready to begin tracking. The fee is equal to the cost that the commission is charged from the vendor to use the system, and it is a pass-through fee, so the authority is not recognizing any revenue from this. If you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Well, that's simple. Mr. McDonald.
Oh, sure. Tom McDonald from the DAS Chief Financial Office. We recommend to approve the request.
Thank you, Ms. Ames.
And the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that you include the fee adopted by the Oregon Health Authority for use of the cannabis tracking system in a fee ratification bill.
Thank you.
Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any further discussion or questions? Is there any opposition? Not so moved. I don't know where Representative Bueller is. Anybody seen him this morning? Okay.
Didn't check in with me. Surprisingly.
Amazing. All right. Fine. Next, we're up to Information Exchange Network, looks like.
Madam Chair, the second item is a federal grant request that would provide funds to the agency to transition to the new federal drinking water data system.
Mm. Cool.
Again, Patrick Allen, Director of the Health Authority. Just want to observe that despite its name, this is not an IT project in any meaningful sense of the word. This is connecting to somebody else's IT project. And with that, I'll introduce David Emmy to talk just a little bit about that.
Thank you.
Good Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm David Emmy, manager of the drinking water program at the Oregon Health Authority. I am 1 year into this job to the day, and my first appearance here.
I got you beat.
So we are seeking retroactive approval to apply for a small competitive EPA grant through the Exchange Network program. The amount of the grant application is $120,000. A little bit of background, I'll be brief. We regulate 3,400 public water systems in the state. All of the data associated with these systems, including over 180,000 lab analyses that we received and used to verify compliance, is managed in a legacy database that was created by EPA called the Safe Drinking Water Information System, or affectionately known as SIDWIS, by those of us who work in the program. EPA has, for several years, been working on a replacement of this legacy system, a cloud-based system that we would submit data to. We will need to transition our work efforts to use this new system over the next 18 months or so. And we will also would like to maintain a local version of our data so we can continue to display relevant drinking water data on our public website. The grant funds would give us access to a federal technical assistance contractor to help us transition to the use of this new database system. It's a one-time grant. We're not proposing to support any staff costs with it. All the funds would be used for contractor costs through a blanket purchase authorization. So we're essentially using an EPA contractor to do this work. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Emmy? Excellent. Mr. McDonald.
Again, I'm Tom McDonald with the Chief Financial Office. We recommend to approve the request.
Thank you. Ms. Ames?
LFO recommends the approval of the request to apply for a grant to the EPA in the amount of up to $200,000 over a three-year period to transition to the new federal drinking water data system.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, I'd move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Just a comment, Madam Chair. It's nice that we see we're moving to the iCloud from the old legacy systems.
Better for everybody. All right, great. Any opposition to the motion? If not, so moved. Representative Rayfield, would you come
calling? It would be an honor.
Thank you so much. Representative Rayfield will carry this. Okay, health workforce, oral health workforce. Who do we have up now? Oh, Mr. Everbeck, how nice to see you.
Should I start?
Yes, go.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is a federal grant request for funding to address oral health workforce needs. I did want to note the agency will describe this, but there is a state match requirement, which is a little different than some grants.
Patrick Allen with the Health Authority. I have nothing to add, and we'll turn it over to Mr. Overbeck.
Thank you. Director Allen, good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Mark Overbeck. I work for the Oregon Health Authority as a primary care office director, and we are here today requesting your permission to apply for an oral health workforce grant from HRSA, the Health Resources Services Administration, to support our already existing efforts to expand the healthcare workforce in our state. We're very excited about this opportunity. I don't need to share with you about the work that's been done over the past several biennia. And when this opportunity came forward, rather than doing what we have done for the past three grant cycles and focusing on service enhancements, HRSA really wanted to fund innovative approaches to expanding the workforce, and we definitely have that in Oregon. With the passage of House Bill 3261, we see the opportunity to take federal money and bring it alongside of our existing efforts to support the expansion of the oral health care workforce, particularly in three areas. We're going to use this for Coos and Curry counties, Sherman and Gilliam counties, and Crook counties, subject to confirmation with those areas of the state. We want to test and demonstrate our community-based approach to expanding the workforce. We are committed to expanding the oral healthcare FTE in each of those areas. And we're happy to have the opportunity to demonstrate to the federal government that in Oregon we are mastering the challenge of the supply and distribution of our healthcare workforce. We're going to begin on October 1st of 2018. By September 30th, we expect to complete the first pilot efforts, take the effort to scale. Our partnerships for this grant include the Oregon Health and Science University School of Dentistry, the Oregon Office of Rural Health, OHA's Public Health Division, the Transformation Center, and the State Dental Director. With that, I'll ask if there are any questions.
I will just say it, this warms the cockles of my heart. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is very exciting. Very exciting. Representative Alonso Leon.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question. I think this opportunity is awesome, but just wanted to get an idea of how you selected the counties you're going to be working with and doing pilot.
Co-chairs and Representative Alonso Leon, thank you for the question. We have worked with data from the Oregon Office of Rural Health to determine where there is the most unmet need in oral health care, and those areas match up very well. We've also been speaking with leaders in the communities and want to take advantage of the OHSU rural campus. And so those areas of the state made the most sense. It's our intention after the first 2 years in demonstrating the effectiveness to take it to scale in other areas of the state.
Excellent, thank you. I think one of the most important points here is what we already know, and Mr. Overbeck alluded to House Bill 3261 that Representative Nathanson and I passed last year. The point, what we know is that when we train people from rural areas, they will stay and work in those rural areas. And one of the best ways to ensure that we have adequate healthcare workforce of any type is to train people where they live and where they want to work and stay. So I'm delighted by this. I'm delighted that we're targeting those communities and really look forward to watching the progress of this. Any other, Representative Hayden?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. I think this is a really good initiative, and just a little bit of history. The collaborative that we see coming together here for oral health is really exciting to see. Sometimes we see movement, not at all, if we're there watching all the time, but it is moving. There was a time in the 90s when the Oregon Health Science University wouldn't even allow recruiters from organizations that worked with the Oregon Health Plan to come in and recruit students, so they wouldn't allow them on the campus. And so if you take that from the 90s to where we're at now and something like this, you can really see, you know, over a 20-year progression of how we're approaching that, and then integrating oral health into our system is very important. So thank you.
Great. Any further discussion or questions? Mr. McDonald?
Again, Tom McDonald, the Chief Financial Office. We recommend to approve the request.
Thank you, Ms. Ames.
LFO recommends approval of the request to apply for a grant to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the amount of up to $400,000 per year for 4 years to address oral health workforce needs in designated shortage areas.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? If not, so moved. I'll take this one. Thanks. Okay. Next, Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this last item is a progress report on behavioral health regional governance. Remember during the 2017 session, the health authority came in and presented recommendations fairly late in session from the Behavioral Health Collaborative, including a recommendation for a regional governance model. There was much discussion about that and concern that it not add another layer of bureaucracy or, you know, another official layer. And in a budget note, the legislature asked the agency to make a progress report now or fairly early on, and then I think there'll be another report in December, which will kind of prep you for the 2019 session.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Patrick Allen with the Health Authority. I'm going to yield my chair so that these guys can drive the PowerPoint, and I'll ask Mike Morris and Royce Bolin to come up and present the progress report.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Royce Bolin. I'm the Behavioral Health Director for Oregon Health Authority. Mike Morris and myself are here to present on what was called in the budget note the single point of shared accountability, which we have changed based on recommendations from the governance and finance work group to call it the regional behavioral health collaboratives, because that really is the true meaning behind the work that we're going to be presenting. So Mike Morris is going to provide a little update, or not an update, but some history, and then I'm going to provide an update on where we are.
Thank you.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Mike Morris, and I'm the Behavioral Health Policy Administrator with the Oregon Health Authority. And so I will more quickly go through these slides that talk about the what led up to the development of the proposal for regional behavioral health collaboratives this morning. So one of the things that the behavioral health collaborative came out of was the series of town halls that Senator Gelser pulled together, listening to consumers of behavioral health services and what their needs were. And what we heard during those town halls is that barriers include long wait times to get appointments, not able to get to access the type of care that they're actually seeking, not being able to be seen in the most appropriate setting, shortage of qualified behavioral health workforce, frequently turnover of staff, which has led to individuals' impact, is that they would start with an individual in the seeing a counselor or a case manager, and then they would have a turnover in staff and then have to start off with somebody new. So out of the collaborative, this is not rocket science here, but we articulated with the group a vision for the behavioral health care, and that's listed in this slide. This was developed, the regional, the behavioral health collaborative convened between May and October of 2016, finalized the report in January of 2017, and this was a wide group of stakeholders, including consumers of behavioral health services, CCOs, local public health authorities, OIA, Department of Ed, Department of Human Services, et cetera. So it was a wide group, about 50 individuals who worked on this collaborative in developing recommendations. So one of the recommendations that came out of the behavioral health collaborative was to develop regional approaches. There were some examples identified during the collaborative, the Gorge being the Columbia Gorge and what they're doing there regarding bringing physical health care and behavioral health together in planning and transparency. So out of that came the recommendations that we should support and implement these regional behavioral health collaboratives. At the time, we were calling them single points of shared accountability. So one of the things that what we want to do is not duplicate the existing structures or create another layer. So what we mean by that is, as we look at these collaboratives and bringing the local stakeholders together, is that we are not requiring additional things. If we do require further planning, for example, regarding priorities and how the community will come together to meet those priorities, we're looking at existing requirements. For example, there is a community health assessment, community health improvement plan that the CCOs are required to do and put together is what we would do. And we have behavioral health, we have biennial implementation plans. So we would not require those separate plans, but we would encourage them to use those structures in that planning process to for the collaborative to focus on behavioral health and just make sure there's a focus within those structures and not create a separate requirement. So that is, when we talk about not developing another layer, that is what we're talking about. One of the things that we did as far as the Regional Behavioral Health Collaborative is there needs to be bringing together, convening the primary stakeholders, CCOs, community mental health programs, and local public health authorities, and then bring other stakeholders across the board that have a stake in this. Review relevant state, local needs assessment reports and other information. Select three behavioral health priorities, topic areas to focus on over the next 2 years, and develop an action plan with common goals and outcomes. So one of the things that people will often ask is, what is the value of the Behavioral Health Collaborative? Why are we doing this? During the time of the Behavioral Health Collaborative we were meeting, there were a lot of discussions in the community in different settings about behavioral health services. What is the role of the CCO? What is the role of the community mental health program? You know, there were even discussions of, should it move back to the community mental health program? Should it move all over to the CCO? And so part of the collaborative in bringing this group together was to talk about that. What is the role? And then a way to bring behavioral health system, bring folks together to have common metrics, common goals, and vision, and planning that is happens at the local level, and that they're achieving outcomes. And so that was the intent of this, as far as having these regional behavioral health collaboratives. So.
Sorry, thank you. Thank you for this information. I have just a clarifying question. When the CCOs are coming together, actually, can you go back to the prior? And they're selecting three behavioral health priority topics. That means that it could be different in Marion County area as opposed to Multnomah County area. Is that correct, based on the needs of the community?
Yes. Representative Alonzo Leon, yes, that's correct, and that is why it's really important that what works in the metro area doesn't work in the valley, doesn't work over in eastern Oregon, doesn't work on the coast, and that's why it's important for us to provide some structure. There are some things that we will provide direction. For example, we do have our work with the U.S. Department of Justice, and we need to make sure that even at the local level, they're focusing on that, but we want to provide the flexibility to address the specific needs of that community.
Perfect, thank you.
This may be a question that you'll be answering more later, but, and if so, feel free to tell me to wait. I see organizations that provide services to people on Medicaid listed there. I don't see any evidence of integration of commercial payers. Now, I recognize that first and foremost, obviously, the health authority has responsibility for providing care for people on Medicaid, but I don't think it's any secret that in this state, historically, you get better mental health care if you're on Medicaid than if you're on commercial insurance. And one would hope, and I thought that the plan was that these behavioral health collaboratives would address overarching behavioral health issues within a region, not just for people on Oregon Health Plan. Am I misremembering or missing something?
Yes, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, a couple of comments on that. One is when the community mental health programs have a much broader kind of focus, and so that's one of the challenges is, for example, like I referred to the CHIP and the CHA, the Community Health Improvement Plan, the Community Health Assessment, is that you need to broaden the scope of that is just not the Medicaid members and that those plans are focused on. So that's one aspect. The other is, for the time being, focus on the more public side of the behavioral health system because we see there are some specific needs regarding coming together on that. At the same time, we have been at the Oregon Health Authority, been working with Department of Consumer and Business Services, DCBS, on parity in the organizing and collaborating on our efforts on the commercial side, on their side, and then on the public side, so that we can have an impact on behavioral system broader than just the public Medicaid system.
Thank you.
Dan, can you take over for a second? Thanks.
Please continue.
All right, so where we are today with currently with the regional behavioral health collaboratives, as Mike mentioned, we have the structure or the structure of what we want the regional behavioral health collaboratives to look like. What we've decided to do, because this is a significant lift, we're not providing additional money, we're providing additional technical assistance, we're providing facilitation and helping with convening, but essentially we're not providing more money for the CCO, the CMHP, or the local public health authority to engage in this effort. So we've decided that we would focus on pilots. We also haven't done this kind of collaborative. We've done similar collaboratives across the state, but we haven't done specifically a behavioral health collaborative. So we really want to focus on three areas, a metro area or urban area, an urban area or metro area. I'm saying that again. A metro area, frontier area, and a rural area, to see what is the best way to engage those communities to form these regional behavioral health collaboratives and do it in a meaningful way. What my concern is if we go in and we really force and push, I think that goes against what really we're asking people to do, which is having systems come together to focus on key behavioral health issues that are specific to their community, and to really what I would call have more of a collective impact approach, where we know that not just one system, one provider can really accomplish large system changes. So given that, we've decided to pilot these again across the state. We're looking at identifying and standing up these pilots within the next 6 months. Also, the pilots will provide us more information as we move into CCO 2.0 and what that looks like and what the role is in that process. Again, as I mentioned, we're looking for an urban, rural, and frontier region. We're looking for areas that are ready and may already have structures in place that look like or are similar to a behavioral health collaborative. As Mike mentioned, the Gorge has something very similar. We're looking at areas that have expressed interest and desire to move forward with these collaboratives. And we're looking for opportunities in communities. So if something's in a community that they're looking to solve, this is a great opportunity to pull systems together and to work collaboratively in order to address those issues. As far as enforcement with the within the pilots and the collaborative, we're looking at Oregon administrative rules. There's rules that talk about the relationship between the CMHP and the CCO. So we're looking at ways of embedding, again, this work once we have a better idea of how it plays out in the community and embedding that within those rules. So we'd be looking at making administrative rule changes specific to the collaborative and the requirements under the collaborative. We're also providing technical assistance, as I mentioned earlier. We'll be providing facilitation services as well. And then OHA will be helping and supporting these collaboratives to get up and running and making sure that we have the right people at the table.
Thank you. Representative Valenzuela?
Thank you, Chair. Just another quick question just for me to better understand. When you speak about key system partners, mm-hmm. does that include culturally specific organizations as partners?
Yes, it does. Within the guideline document, the draft guideline document that specifically mentions or talks about the Regional Behavioral Health Collaborative, we have listed out recommended stakeholders, providers, consumers, and those individuals or those groups. And OHA will be involved in reviewing that list to make sure that it's complete, that we have the right system partners at the table, and providing feedback to those collaboratives.
Thank you. Representative Buehler?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Can you outline briefly for me exactly what the roles are in a typical county for community mental health programs and local public health authorities?
So I can outline the community mental health programs, and I probably would need to get a little bit more information about local public health. With the community mental health programs, they're responsible for providing the safety net services, so crisis services, commitment services, abuse investigations, oversight of the residential system. Am I missing anything, Mike?
Yes, in addition to that, they are providing the services, what I refer to as filling in the gaps for people going on and off of Oregon Health Plan, and also, which is a, more of a federal issue, is oftentimes individuals with serious and persistent mental illness or serious illnesses, if they have Medicare, Medicare does not pay for a lot of the services that they need, for example, to serve community treatment. So the community mental health program fills a role in filling in the gaps in all those areas.
And local public health authorities?
They're responsible for, probably not the best person to speak to what they're responsible for, but they're looking at more population management and improving the health and well-being of the population, not just from a behavioral health standpoint, but from a physical standpoint, looking at risk factors and mitigating risk factors related to poor health.
Go ahead, unless you could quit for now, Representative. Okay, good.
Yeah,
sorry, Maelstrom. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question. I know there are units list that the pilots across the state are going to learn about mitigating barriers prior to launching. Can you elaborate a little bit about there? I mean, there's lots of barriers and they're big and complicated. What can you give me some examples?
Yeah. So with standing up these collaboratives, there are a lot of we know some of the barriers into bringing different system partners together. It's time, resources, all those kinds of things. But there are a number of probably unknown barriers. We don't know what we don't know. And so for us to launch it across the state, I think there's some risk because, again, we don't know what we don't know. And so we want to make sure that that we learn what those are and we remove those prior to, again, launching across the state.
So then I'm a little confused now based on your response to Representative Buehler. And Mr. Morse, I apologize if I missed something. I got a fairly urgent call in the middle of your response that I had to ignore temporarily. You said that the CMHPs were in part responsible for the commercially insured population, which I agree. But when Mr. Boland gave his response, he talked more about the sort of urgent crisis and inpatient type services, and I was as interested, maybe I didn't articulate my question as clearly as I could have, but the ongoing needs, day-to-day needs for behavioral health treatment for everyday people who may not be in what we consider crisis, who may not have what we consider severe persistent mental illness, but certainly would benefit for treatment of their underlying mental health issues. So can you clarify between what the two of you said about how this is still going to have a positive impact on those people's access to the kinds of services that they may need on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, so CMHPs get funding to also provide services for individuals who are uninsured or underinsured. So the services that maybe their private insurance might not pay for, for those individuals who are, again, in between services. So there are some safety net services that the CMHPs do provide.
Okay. I'm really not trying to be difficult. I promise.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be adversarial. I'm still confused. Every one of us up here has
pretty good health insurance, right? Mm-hmm. You guys do too. Yet, I would argue pretty strongly that we may not have the access to behavioral health services that we would benefit from sometimes, right? Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. It depends on where we live, and it depends on exactly what our insurance is, and it depends on all sorts of things like that.
No, Senator, my employees who have really good insurance can't find providers.
That's my point. That's my point.
They drive to the valley.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's my point. And so what I'm trying to understand is not the safety net aspect, because frankly, the CMHPs are not going to take care of Representative Bueller's patients because employees, because in theory, they have insurance that will cover those benefits. They just don't have access to the providers. They don't have access to the workforce. We heard from Mr. Overbeck about the work that they're doing to increase the workforce in areas of the state that are underserved with oral health services. I'm trying to understand how the model that you're establishing is going to improve access for every Oregonian to the kinds of behavioral health services that I think we all believe many people need at some point or another in the course of their lives.
Yeah, and when I'm talking about the underserved, I think a large part of that population is individuals who are on or underinsured, or individuals who are on Medicare that don't pay again for the services that, that Medicaid pays for. I'm not answering your question. No,
because I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I'm asking you that there's another population, right? A quarter of our state's on Medicaid. All right, we know that they're taken care of in theory by this model, right? Three quarters of the state is on some form of commercial or Medicare insurance, right? So Medicare, we know, doesn't pay for a lot of these services, and that's about 24%. Of our state's population. If they have an Advantage plan, maybe I'm not going to get into the details here too much. The other 50% of us are on some form of commercial insurance that's supposed to have some kind of mental health parity. And even if it does, which I don't think it does, which is why we passed that other bill last year to actually assess it, even if it does, we don't have the access to having insurance does not guarantee access, mm-hmm. right? Having insurance that covers the services you need doesn't mean you can get them if the people aren't there to provide them, right? So I'm still trying to understand how the model that you're proposing is going to help improve that problem. Obviously, the parity issue is real, and that's part of the solution, and Mr. Morris alluded to that in the first part of his presentation in the work you're doing with DCBS. That's necessary, but I think insufficient. So I'm trying to understand how this is going to affect the other three-quarters, half the population of the state.
Well, I would, so the collaboratives are one piece of it, and so it's probably looking at the other efforts that we're doing around workforce, around health information technology, care coordination, and those kinds of things. I think that we certainly can look at how do we include private insurance within the collaboratives. That certainly would be, I think, an essential piece. I think that we are going to have some challenges getting them at the table, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. And they are responsible for providing services that the CMHP is currently providing. So somebody like me, if I have a mental health crisis, I'm going to get the CMHP is going to come to my home and is going to assess me. It's not my insurance company, and it doesn't matter if I have Medicare or any of those kinds of things. So I wonder if it's us looking at how do we include private insurance within this model, and then also we are looking at workforce specifically to behavioral health, and we're looking at how to integrate health information and those kinds of things and standards for workforce. So I think it's not just the behavioral health collaborative isn't just this piece. It's multifaceted.
Looks like Mr. Allen would like to contribute something.
Yeah, thanks. If I could add just a little bit, again, Patrick Allen, Director of the Health Authority. I think I've been pretty candid with people that I came into this job knowing less about behavioral health than really anything else that we do, and I've been climbing up a pretty steep learning curve. But 5 or so months in, I think I've got a pretty good handle on the nature of the challenges that we face, as particularly outlined by Senator Steiner Hayward. And I think I think at the very end, I think Royce touched on it, which is, and our work in this area, I think, is a little bit hobbled by the fact that we made an organizational decision a couple of years ago to basically split up where all this work happens in the organization. It's very hard to connect it and really know who's accountable for what. I think it's clear that we need to widen our perspective on mental health and as well as addictions and recovery to be able to look more comprehensively at the, if you think about the mission of the our organization is the health of Oregonians. I think you hit it on the head that it's easy for us to slip into being the agency that makes sure the Oregon Health Plan runs well, that what our real job is to transform health and healthcare across the state at an affordable cost. And it's that pulling back and looking at the broader perspective that I think we probably need to do a better job of. I think the collaborative is a piece of that kind of a strategy, but that we need that wider focus to be able to look comprehensively at all those issues around people who are on public programs, people who are on Medicare Advantage, who are in the insured market, who are in the sort of insured market where it's self-insured. And we've talked some about how that's a completely unregulated area that causes lots of friction. But I think you're exactly right, Senator. We need to widen that perspective.
I appreciate that, Mr. Allen. Thank you. I'll look forward to hearing, when we hear more updates, I'll look forward to understanding more about your work in that direction. Representative Rayfield and then Representative Buehler.
So, I've been a part of, in our community, in different areas, there's different types of collaborative organizations come together and they have these lofty goals and they set goals and they make these action plans and 5 years later, nothing's different. And so I'm kind of looking through this.
Sounds like foster care.
There are many examples, and that we can kind of point to of like similar things. And so I looking at this, I just what type of mechanisms are in place so that you do something which is well intentioned, but then we don't wind up 2 years down the road and go, oh boy, it really didn't do a darn thing. We set some great standards, but we made no progress.
Yeah. Representative Rayfield, that's exactly the reason why we want to pilot these, is because we don't want to do something that has a negative impact and really doesn't add value to the work that's already happening in the community. And I think that time will give us that information, because again, I don't want something that's going to sit on a shelf and never actually nothing gets done. What we're proposing within the Regional Behavioral Health Collaboratives is, again, we want to make sure that we know who's at the table. We're going to be a little prescriptive in what the priorities are. As Mike indicated, OPP is a huge priority for us. And then we are going to measure the outcomes at the state level to see whether or not there's improvement in those specific areas, but also measuring what happens in the collaboration. Are systems working closer together? Are they collaborating? Are they consulting when they're making decisions? So there's also that process piece that we will need to look at.
Representative Buehler.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Similar to Representative Rayfield, I'm concerned with this model that you diffuse accountability even more. And there's not clear metrics, at least from my perspective. It's what the CCOs were designed to do, is to be that single point of coordination, thus the name. And now you're diffusing that accountability at another level. I encourage you to go back and look at this again and look at making the CCOs the truly accountable care organization, which at least that was my impression the system was designed to.
But they really only work for the Medicaid patients, right, Representative? So, I mean, I hear what you're saying about extra luxury bureaucracy, but the issue is
your point, let's put that in the parking lot, I completely agree with it. But with regards to the Medicaid population, we still don't have a single point of accountability.
I don't disagree with you. So.
If I could just, Co-Chairs, Representative Buehler, your question is exactly the one that I've been pressing on these guys on since I've been in the agency as well, is that notion of, when you set this up, who do we go to if we think things aren't working, and who's accountable, and particularly in a model that's a technical assistance rather than funding model, you know, the old saying about, you know, it's hard to herd cats unless you have a dish of milk. Well, we don't have a dish of milk in this model, right? And so this is something that I'm also very interested in. I think you're right that the work we're doing on CCO 2.0, particularly, you know, we got some really good results out of the OHSU assessment, but we also got some good signposts about what we need to work on, and care integration is one of those. Senator Steiner Hayward's point is exactly right, that that's the Oregon health plan market, and behavioral health is something that lives in both spheres, and so we need to have a focus that includes both. But this notion of who's responsible and who do you go to if you think it's not working, and who do I go to if I think it's not working, is a critical component we need to do better on.
And I'd even take one step more. We don't even have a objective measurement to say when it's not working, right? We've done a good job on the physical health side of that, but we have not done a good job on the behavioral health, and I would even add to that, I don't want to broaden this too much, but the social determinants, right? So we talk about those things, but we don't have a metric to hold CCOs or other providers accountable for those things. So I think key components that we need to try to put in.
Go ahead. I was going to say, and then, you know, part of that point, and it sort of gets back to Mr. Allen's point about the health authority being responsible for the health of all Oregonians.
Yeah.
You know, we have the combined metrics and scoring task force committee, whatever it's called now, that was established from Senate Bill 440 in 2015, with the point being that all Oregonians should be considered, their health should be considered the same way, and we should have behavioral health metrics included in those for exactly that reason, and then every commercial insurer, every CCO would be held accountable, but you can't have infinite numbers of metrics, right? That's not good for anybody either. So we need to figure out how to adjust that. Mr. Allen, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Good. Mr. Bullen.
All right.
Back to you.
Thank you. Thank you for those questions. Next slide. So as Mike talked about, we have some great examples of collaborations that are occurring across the state. We have the Gorge Healthcare Council, which is led by Pacific Source and includes Wasco and Hood counties. Again, they bring communities together, also including physical health providers, behavioral health professionals, and other organizational representatives. Some of them are hospitals, medical centers, dental practice, FQHC, and again, what they do is they establish priorities and goals for their community to reach. And then HealthShare recently engaged in a collaborative specifically associated with specialty alcohol and drug services. And so they started with a smaller group, but quickly they realized they needed to expand their group to include not only the insurance company, but include the CMHPs, include alcohol and drug providers, consumers. And so what they've done is actually they've gotten pretty close to what we're asking. Kind of close, not all, totally close to what we're asking for the members to be on, for the members to be on the regional behavioral health collaboratives. So I just wanted to point out some of those models that are working that we hope to learn from.
We apologize for the distraction. We have a new eight-legged member of our committee up here, so we're trying to convince him that he belonged in a different committee. So, sorry.
So again, I want to thank the legislature for supporting and pushing us around behavioral health integration and improving behavioral health services for Oregonians. I also want to recognize that Governor Brown provided a letter to the Oregon Health Policy Board to focus on four areas. One of them is behavioral health, and so we are looking at different metrics. We're looking at how do you define integration, how do you measure integration, and all those kinds of things into what we want to put into CCO 2.0, and so we're starting that process.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Valenzuela.
Just a comment, and I want to touch on something that you said, Senator. And that's the idea of not having enough mental health professionals, right? And it's, I want to say it from a more broader perspective, right? It goes back to recruitment having, you know, more multilingual, culturally specific therapists, and how can we recruit them to get into those fields, right? And then so that they are available to us, and how can we make that, how can we make the insurance system easier for them to be able to work with insurance companies? Because I've been, you know, people in my community tell me, I found a great therapist, but they don't take my insurance. Or I found the only Spanish-speaking therapist in my area, but they don't take my insurance. And now that person does not have a therapist who to, you know, whom to go to, unless they can afford to pay out of pocket, which, you know, it's very expensive for a lot of members of my community. So, I mean, you know, it's a bigger, it's a big issue, very broad issue. And what can we do in partnering with our education system so that we could bring in more therapists from, you know, different skill sets, trainings, and culturally specific backgrounds?
Representative Alfonso Leon, we part of the Behavioral Health Collaborative was looking at workforce and looking exactly those issues, and even take it a step further, looking at who should be providing the services, because out of my 20-something years of being a behavioral health provider, you don't always need somebody with certain credentials or certain licenses to do some of the work. And so I think we need to take a broader perspective of what really is our behavioral health workforce. That includes working with educational systems, also working with licensing boards in order to ensure that people get to see the people that they feel that they can connect with.
Representative, oh, go ahead, Representative.
Yeah. I share your concern on this. In a lot of communities, too, disadvantaged communities, it's going to be very difficult to get culturally specific providers in those communities. And I'm still puzzled, despite our best efforts on healthcare committee a few years ago to allow telemedicine services, it's still not taking off. You know, and you'd think that this would be an area that would be most fertile ground for it. Any insights either from you gentlemen or this committee why that isn't occurring? Is there something we can do to facilitate? Or?
Representative Malmstrom, you want to chime in?
I want to chime in on that. My daughter-in-law is a mental health provider, and I saw how much money she had to put into her education, and I see what she gets paid, and she gets paid more than most people. And until we pay these people more, they're not going to want to go to this profession. She could make more doing a whole lot of other things, and she loves her work. And over the years, she's just had more and more clients. She speaks Spanish, but she's not bicultural. They keep shoving Spanish-speaking people on her, and that's really not her focus, but it's kind of like, well, you speak some Spanish, you deal with this. I mean, there's all sorts of problems.
Where's she work?
She works at Western Psychological in Beaverton.
So there are multiple problems, and I think your point is well taken, both of you, all of you. We know our workforce is inadequate, and that's true for a whole host of reasons. I agree with Mr. Boland that this isn't a one-size-fits-all model, right? We need a wide range of types of behavioral health providers. We need a wide range of ways of delivering it. In some communities, it's culturally unacceptable to seek help from a behavioral health provider, even if one is available to you. So co-location, so that you can say, I'm going to the doctor, and you walk into your primary care office, and you, in fact, work with the social worker there, that's an important way of making sure that we have access, right? Co-location, we know, makes a big difference in access to services. And co-location of the right kinds of providers in the right locations is obviously critically important. Telemedicine's important. We know that, for example, the OPAL-K program, the Oregon Psychiatric Access Line for Kids program, has made a huge difference to access to care for kids across the state. And in fact, we have a bill on the Senate, starting on the Senate side this year, to expand that to adults as well and just turn it into plain old OPAL for everybody. Because we think it's important to take advantage of the expertise that we have at OHSU to help primary care providers across the state, urban and rural, some of which is culturally specific, most of it is not specifically, but at least it's a big help. Mr. Boland, I think your colleague, Mr. Overbeck, is doing some really great work, and as he mentioned, House Bill 3261 established a program
that would, under the direction of the Workforce Committee of the Health Policy Board, work with communities to establish programs to train people where they already live and in the communities that most need them. And I think, you know, Representative Alonso Leon's point reminds me that one could talk about establishing a program like that to specifically train people from a specific community. We need more people from the Latino community. Let's train more people. Let's do outreach. Let's design a program that's culturally specific and do that and make sure that we do that. And there's money available for this. There's a lot of money available to do this. Communities have to step up. There's a match required, all that kind of stuff, and it's still in process getting set up. But there's a lot of opportunity in this arena. So I would hope that one of the things you're hearing from us today is not only a desire from this body that you expand the mandate and not just focus on the needs of publicly insured Oregonians, but also look at workforce issues and how you can take advantage, as Mr. Overbeck and his team are, to address another woefully under-supplied workforce, to think about ways to work with communities. I mean, we have a great social work program at PSU. I am not going to ask the people from Ontario and Baker and LeGrand to come into Portland to train when we also have Eastern Oregon University and Blue Mountain and Treasure Valley Community Colleges out there and four small cities that could work together collaboratively to establish a social work program under the direction and guidance and support of PSU, for example. It's a tiny example.
Yeah.
But we know that if we locate programs where people live, they will train there, they will stay there, they will practice there. And we need to be thinking about how do we do that as effectively, efficiently, and quickly as possible. So I agree with everything Jim said.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, there are other examples of Opal A, Opal K, and then we're also expanding our Project Echo, which is working with older adults and pulling a team of experts to work with a cohort over a period of time to get those professionals more comfortable in working with older adults, which has been also highly successful. So there are definitely different models out there that we're interested in.
And we're looking to expand all of those programs this year. So, yeah, good. Okay, other questions for this panel? Do we need to acknowledge receipt of this report, Mr. McDonald? Do you do anything with that? You're just sitting there looking handsome? Okay, good.
Tom McDonald, the Chief Financial Office, and we recommend to acknowledge receipt of the report.
Thank you. Sorry, I was probably an inappropriate comment, but I don't know what else to say at this point.
And LFO recommends acknowledging receipt of the report on the development of the behavioral health regional governance model.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair?
I'm sure I move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield moves the LFO recommendation. Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple comments. I learn something every day, so this is the first time I've heard urban, rural, and frontier. So I look forward to seeing where the frontier areas are, although I think
frontier
they do.
Frontier counties are defined as those where the population is less than one person per square mile. Malheur County is a frontier county. Harney is a frontier county.
Don't worry, it's not Jackson County.
Yeah,
it's not Jackson.
And it's interesting to hear that. But I do have a comment,
Lake,
too.
Lake, I think.
As you most of you are aware, that Jackson County had a little rift between the CCO and the Jackson County itself, which was very harmful for both the patients, the community, and employees. So I gratefully appreciate your work and comment to the Director Allen that we look forward to taking care of what probably is the most important problem we have in the state of Oregon is mental health or the country itself. And I'd like to acknowledge that. Thank you very much.
Great. Any further discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? If not, so moved. Senator DeBoer, would you be kind enough to take this floor?
Yes.
Thank you. Good. Okay. Ms. Ames, any other business before the committee? Okay. Colleagues, I just want to give you a heads up. The work of a subcommittee during short session is limited, to say the least. So, Ms. Ames will be doing her usual great job of keeping us informed about when we're meeting and when we're not meeting. I would ask that you and your staff keep a close eye on your email. We promise we'll give you plenty of notice, but We do not anticipate that we will be meeting every single time. At the moment, our next scheduled meeting is a week from Monday.
Right. Valentine's Day.
No, we meet on Monday. It's the 13th. Or the 12th.
We're not meeting Monday.
Valentine's Day is a Tuesday, isn't it?
No, it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday.
Never mind. Wednesday. We're meeting on Valentine's Day. Sorry, I'm calendar challenged.
I'm glad we could clear up your professional calendar and your social calendar.
Well, I actually have a date that night, believe it or not. We have theater tickets. Very rare for my husband and me. Okay, good. Any other business before the committee? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. I meant to say.